Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for September 30th. It's brought to you in part by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and joining me early on Saturday morning is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good here at Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast Plaza. Actually, I'm in the annex. John is in the central control room.
There you go.
We're connected via cyberspace, but we're here. We got a bond that's bigger than cyberspace, baby.
That's right, man. Hey, and thanks for waking up early to tape. I know you got a trip. You're going abroad here, so I appreciate you waking up early on Saturday morning.
No problem. It's a must-do.
It's a must-do. Not a can-do, not a will-do. A must-do. I like it. I like
okay,
it.
Okay, well, you better. How many choices do you have? Let's see.
I like the attitude.
I like it. Okay.
I love your enthusiasm. Attack the day with vigor and enthusiasm and like it. All right, on this week's show, we've got an interview with Andrew Jones of the Rakuten Eagles. We're going to discuss their Pacific League title. We're going to discuss Ma-kun, Kazuhisa Ishii, and a lot more. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I went out to Seibu. I'm not going to be able to call it Seibu Sauna for a while. And what do you do? What do we do in the winter when it gets freezing cold out there for no reason?
We call it the
Seibu refrigerator.
No, we call it Seibu ice rink.
Seibu ice rink. All right, I'm there. I went out there.
They have a Seibu ski area.
Oh, that's right.
Next door.
Yeah, not yet.
Well, they do. It'll be.
Oh, that's right. It's the summer.
It'll be opening about the time of the Japan series. So if Seibu's there, you can ski indoors and then watch baseball indoors in the frost.
It's a bunny hill, though. It's not anything serious. So I went out there on Wednesday, and I have to correct something I said on last week's show. I said that A.J. Andrew Jones had gotten his 400th home run. It was 400th double combined in the U.S. and the United States, and I thought it was odd that they would celebrate a double, so I just made it into a home run. So I apologize for that.
Like Dave Niehaus.
Yeah. Michael Westbay of the Pro Yaki Report pointed that out for us, so thanks a lot, Michael. But I did get to talk to AJ, and we sat down, and we were talking about this franchise before we started taping and talked a little bit, and I said, I remember when this franchise started in 2005, and as I recall, they won their first game. Was that Hisashi Iwakuma? I think you went to that game, right, at Chiba?
I did go to that game. They beat Shunsuke Watanabe in the Chiba. No, I'm going to say they beat the Chiba Lotte Marines, and it's 2-0.
Oh,
and they got beat 27-0 the next day.
I thought it was 22.
Was it 22? Okay.
I thought it was 22, but we have to go back and look.
Let's just put it this way: they got their clocks clean.
They got slaughtered, and I think it was that day I created the song. Remember the song? Should I sing the song?
You better sing the song because I don't know what you're talking about.
They're little. They're gutty.
Okay, that's enough.
Gutty.
That's enough. Stop. Okay, get the picture.
I drove my coworkers nuts, I think, singing that song. See, you put it out of your memory.
Yeah, that's the brain that has those kind of emergency relief measures. And as far as driving us crazy, that's right. Sort of like saying,
I was breathing. John was in the room.
As we say in America, that's not a drive, that's a putt.
Oh, man. All right, well, congratulations to the Eagles. They won their first Pacific League title in part. I mean, they lost 97 games that first season, but in part because guys like Andre Jones and Casey McGee have joined the team and put together productive seasons. Here they are atop the Pacific League title after, 8-plus years. This is quite an achievement.
Yeah, it is an achievement, and it's something that it seemed like it had to happen this year. Although, looking at it, it could almost be fate. Baseball fate.
The baseball gods have spoken, have they?
wow, one day I'm ready for the turkey shoot, the next day I'm the baseball god. Wow.
Not you. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, good. I'm glad you confused me.
I'm sorry, you thought this was about you?
I thought it was always about me.
No, it's about the Eagles, dude. Okay.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, that takes some weight off his shoulders.
I bet. Now this season, AJ's been pretty productive, but he leads the league in strikeouts. He's got the most walks. He's got the most hit by pitches, but he's got, 25 home runs, 17 doubles. His production, 18 doubles actually. His production has been very noteworthy, but mostly he's stayed healthy and he's been able to be productive at 36. And that's the big key for me.
Okay.
When you get these veteran players, how much can you use them? How much, once they get injured, what happens to him? He's been very, very healthy. I think he sat out his first game on Friday, and I think that might have been, you know, too much partying. Maybe that's why he ended up sitting out. So he got the big hit in the clincher, which was on Thursday.
Yes. Seventh inning, two out, bases loaded double.
You're supposed to say it, man. Clearing the bases. It's perfectly set up for clearing the bases, and you didn't see it.
Early in the morning for that kind of subtlety, Mr. Gibson.
All right, well, let's listen to the subtlety of Andrew Jones.
Our guest this week is Andrew Jones. I should pronounce it correctly, Andrew. That's correct. Everybody likes to say Andrew back in the States. Now, thank you for joining us this week.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, let's go back to March and the WBC when you guys beat Cuba. And at the end of that game, I know you scored the winning run, and you ran straight across the plate, and you ran right in front of the Cuban bench, and you were very animate. What was behind that?
Well, I mean, no disrespect to the players for Cuba. I think, you know, the whole thing behind it was with the manager. The manager was really disrespecting to their own players and disrespect the other players on other teams. So, you know, that was everything underneath the whole or scoring and screaming in front of their dugout. No disrespecting to their players or nothing, not disrespecting to Cuba, nothing. It was just the manager that was the one that started all this, and that's how it happened.
So it was all for him?
Yes.
Okay. All right, now you've had an interesting season in that you have a lot of strikeouts, but you have a lot of production with the walks and with the home runs, and you have a good amount of RBIs. How would you classify this season for you?
The season, personally, you know, it's not what, you know, I really want, but, you know, I take a season like this every day when we're winning, and I think that's the most important thing. You know, individual stats come after, but I think the production of helping the team win and be in first place, that's the main thing I focus on through my whole career.
Well, you said it's not the season you would want. In what way?
Well, I mean, you know, I would not like to strike out that much. I think, you know, that's one thing. And, you know, average-wise, you know, maybe more consistent. But after that, that's, you know, I mean, you know, driving runs, taking walks, hitting home runs, that's part of the game.
I've been noticing that the pitchers have been busting you inside all season long. They've been working the inside part of the plate. Why is that?
Oh, I don't know. You know, I mean, you can look at I lead the league in hit by pitch, so, you know, I really don't know why. You know, maybe they think that I can hit the fastball inside or something, but, you know, I really not pay much attention to what they're doing. I'm just trying to look for my pitch and hit and then make adjustments.
Okay. Now, you joined this team after the WBC. What were your impressions early on of the Eagles?
Well, I think everything started in, you know, during the spring training when I was there for like a few days. You know, we bond together. We talk what our goal was to be for the rest of the season. You know, we work from there and we went from there. You know, I joined them. I didn't was with them the whole spring training, but when I came back, you know, I find out that, you know, everybody was ready to go and excited about an upcoming season.
So what did you think about the players individually?
We had a young team. You know, coming into the season, I know what we had, you know, because of them, my searches. We had a young team. We had a good pitching staff. It's not showing the way it this year that much, but, you know, last year, the team had problems scoring runs, and this year we are scoring runs. So, you know, it's not always things going to go the same way on both sides of the game. But, you know, we're taking it. We're taking it. We're in first place. And, you know, I'm really proud about all, you know, the job that everybody's been doing.
Yeah, you guys are on the verge of winning this Pacific League title after this team was an expansion team just, you know, in 2005. What has been the key? I mean, you guys have a great pitcher and then some other good pitchers, and you have a bunch of guys. I don't think a lot of Japanese public, they know them if they saw them in public.
Well, not really, you know, because they're all young guys. You know, we got a good solid of young guys that go out there every day and get the job done. You know, you don't see them by their name or who they are, but, you know, our fans from Sendai, they know all of them. You know, they're really proud of them. They know when they get on their field, they give all they got 100%, and until the game is over, and it's not over. You know, I think that's the main thing that happened with this team this year. You know, I mean, we fight towards the end. I know we had a great pitching in our starting rotation at Tanaka, but you know, we cannot count on him every day. You know, we only
he works once a week.
So we need to focus on the rest of the part of the team, and I think everybody's been doing a tremendous job.
Okay. Did you really see this coming, though, a Pacific League title?
You know, coming in the season, you know, anything can happen. I think.
We know anything can happen. Did you really think it though?
You look around the league. You know, it's a lot of guys around the league that they're having a good year or they have good teams. You know, I think you look around, you know, every team that we play in our division been solid, you know. You know, even the team that you think that it's not going to be that par is doing it. So, you know, I don't know. I don't want to lie to you.
Don't lie to me.
No, I'm not lying. But, you know, expectation was not big for this team because nobody picked them to be in first place this year. So
one expert did. One.
Well,
a bunch of them, I saw.
Well,
one guy.
Well, you saw good things then.
Yeah. I picked you guys to finish third. I thought the third place would be about where you guys would be. But, you know, the difference between third place and first place can be, and sometimes can just be a couple of three games, maybe.
Well, you can look at the whole standing. You know, everybody's right there. You know, I think in this division, you know, all the teams play good baseball. You know, we pitch good, we hit, we do the fundamental stuff, and you can see at the that percentage, and everybody's playing over 500 baseball. So that shows how good this whole division is.
All right, now you talked about Masahiro Tanaka earlier. You've gotten to see all of his games. What do you think of him?
Oh, I see a great pitcher. The numbers don't lie. You know, coming into the season, I know what kind of pitcher he was. Watching videos, but you know, watching in person, him going every day about his business, it's impressive. You know, the main thing, he still surprised me every day when he get in trouble, how fast he get out of the trouble. So you know, that's how you know you defy a great pitcher to a regular pitcher.
What's the key to his success? Is it stuff? Is it just a mental approach?
You know, he know what he got. He stays stubborn, and he go about it.
That's good. That's what I do. It doesn't always work for me, though. Now, tell me about how you think he'll do in the States.
He will. You know, I think he's going to have to make his adjustments just like everybody does. Does he have potential to play? Yes. He have all the tools. You know, the main part is he willing to make the quick adjustments? If he's willing to learn fast and adjust to the culture, you know, that's the main parts of you know, making a transition to go back to the States or to come over here. Even a foreigner that come over here, I think the baseball is not nothing because you've been playing baseball since you're a little kid. The baseball is not going to change, but the life, the adjustments that you have to make, that's, are you willing to make them fast? And that's how you be successful.
All right, now, Coco Ballantyne broke the single season home run record. You guys played together on the WBC. I'm sure you've known him for a while. What do you think of him breaking that record?
Well, I'm really proud of it, first of all. You know, being from the same island, you know, him growing up watching me play, you know, being a fan of me, I'm really proud of him. You know, we talk every day. You know, every time we got a chance to hang out, we hang out or I go see him. So, you know, it's been really great. I'm really proud of it, and I'm really happy that it ended up happening, you know, because so many guys got so close and a lot of criticism and you know, guys kind of hold off not pitching to guys and stuff like that. This year it showed me a lot of appreciation of the Japan baseball. Them not holding their own record because, you know, that's kind of take away from the perspective of people come over here and trying to be successful or trying to help a baseball team win championship over and over. So I think that show a lot how how the Japanese and him went about the business.
Now, how have you seen him develop? Because basically in the States he was known as one guy, and then even from his first year to, you know, to this year, he's changed a little bit in his swing a little bit and his approach. What have you seen?
Well, I mean, he became a much better hitter. He started using the whole field, and he's doing it with power. You know, sometimes, you know, having the tools and everything have clicked right away, things like that happen. And you know, right now we can see it. You know, he's having 58 homers or something like that,
yeah.
And having a great year. He's close to win a triple crown. So, you know, when you have tools and, you know, you put everything together and work hard at it, you know, things like that happen.
All right. Well, you guys have been working hard, and things like a first championship is about to happen for you guys. So good luck finishing it out.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Hopefully sooner than later.
Okay. Yeah. Good luck. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you again, Andre. I appreciate you sitting down and answering all the questions as thoroughly as he did. I mean, he was very candid. Yeah. Very candid.
Well, he's always candid. Well, let's put it this way.
When he can be.
He can be a little canny in his candidness sometimes, especially referring to Masahiro Tanaka. He's good because he's good. he gets in more detail than that.
What stood out for you, yeah?
Well, a bunch of things. Having spoke to Andrew Jones off and on this year.
And you did an interview with him in April for the podcast.
Interview with him in April. I've interviewed him probably three times and spoke. I didn't speak to him during the WBC. But in any case, yeah, what stood out was the fact that he was here playing a very positive part for the team, you know, sort of doing, how can I say, he was a perfect role model in that he wasn't the Andrew Jones people expected, I think, but he was the Andrew Jones they needed. He did what he was able to do. You know, he told me every time I talked to him, it was, I sit there and I look for my pitch, and I never said what his pitches were. And one time he said in the summer, he said, I'm still looking for my pitch. And I said, well, you must be ready to hit it when it comes. He said, well, no, because I never see it. So.
Well, then why are you still looking for it?
Yeah. That's the thing. And it seemed like his average did pick up a little bit. And what he was getting is, I guess, you know, he's getting a hit every day or a couple of walks every day. You know, he had 99 walks and he was hit 15 times going into play on Thursday, and when he didn't walk or get hit. So, you know, he said basically he's doing what he needs to do. And I think the key to the Eagles the key to most teams and most players in one respect is staying within yourself and doing the things that you're capable, not trying to be something else. The Eagles have always suffered from trying to be a team they weren't. They lost all those games in their first season, essentially. They were not a bad team, but they sure played like a bad team.
Right.
They played like everybody needed to hit pitches they couldn't hit. They were trying to make swings they weren't good at. They were trying to make pitches they weren't good at. And as a result, they got beat worse than they should have. Well, Andrew Jones wasn't the Andrew Jones of 10 years ago, but he gave them a stability, and Casey McGee gave them production. Andrew Jones gave them production too, although, you know, people say, well, he was hitting 230 or something or 225 at some point.
Yeah, I don't even know what his average peaked at. I want to say somewhere around 260, but he's been between 220 and 240 most of the time, it seems.
Right, it's on the higher side now. It might be 240 something. But the point was, he was always getting the walks. He was always right there in the middle getting big at-bats. Casey was there plugging away. Casey McGee had a big role, and then all these kids, you know, took a step forward. They took stable steps forward. They weren't big leaps. I mean, some of them had good seasons, but I think outstanding production up and down that lineup.
Yeah, and that's
Kazuo Matsui had a very good year for him.
Yeah,
at this stage of his career, and I think that's the point. You know, everybody chipped in with what they were capable of, and it all kind of fell together.
Yeah. Yeah, I was listening, you know, once I got back home and listened to the interview, because I always just try to get the questions out, and I'll follow up if I don't think a guy answered the question, which at one point I didn't think he answered the question about his players. But, you know, I came back and I listened to the interview, and I'm saying, you know, he's kind of contradicting himself, saying he would prefer not to have so many strikeouts, but that he's looking for his pitch, like he said. And I'm like, well, what are these pitches you're looking for? Because in the meantime, I remember I talked about it on last week's show, that he's taking some pitches that maybe he should be swinging at, and I can see them busting him in on the inner half of the plate with hard stuff, and it just would make sense if he looked for those pitches and tried to drive those. But he said that he thought that the pitchers didn't think he could hit them, but I would contend that he's not hitting them, and that's why they're throwing them.
It's a, you know, it's a fluid situation.
Right. Of course, in the clincher, he gets this clearing, this double to clear the bases, and it's a pitch on the outer half.
Yep.
So, and he went with it and drove it to the gap in right center. So I guess in that particular at bat, he got the pitch he was looking for.
Well, it was a very good at bat. You know, it was a slider out of the zone, strike, a fastball low and out of the zone, all away, and then a fastball on the, fastball away in the zone, and then basically threw that same pitch again, and he smacked it.
Yeah, well, this one floated back over the plate. I think it got too much of the plate. I think they were trying to get on the outside.
I don't think it was
on the black, but it came back over.
No, I think that was the same as the one he let go. Yeah. I mean, I don't think there was any difference between the two. I think he was saying, "Oh, well, if that's a strike, I'll swing at the next one that comes there."
Okay. But, at 36, I think you're right. He did give them the kind of production that you could probably expect from a guy who's got 434 homers in the major leagues, and he's hit 25 here. And I don't think you could expect him to hit too much more than that. The ball doesn't really carry out there in Sendai. And as you stated before, some of the PL parks are hard to hit home runs in. So I think he's had a really productive year in terms of that. He's driven in enough runs, so here they are. I mean, I did want to ask him, I had been wanting to ask him why he went nuts at the end of that WBC game in which the Dutch beat the to go to the semifinals, and Victor Mesa's reach spans across the globe, I guess.
Well, Victor Mesa, I guess he left his heart in Japan from the times when he was playing corporate league ball here.
Perhaps, but so I'm glad he answered that question, and gosh, I joked that maybe after Malkun and maybe Kazuo Matsui, I guess if the general public saw some of the Rakuten players out in public, they wouldn't know who these guys are.
Well, how many would you know?
Well, I know a few because I watch so many games, so.
Right.
But I don't know them all either. I don't know what they look like, but I mean.
I would, you know, the foreigners, and with the exception of Jim Heuser, because I see him so rarely. Well, I'll remember him because of the other night, but yeah, Takashi Saito and, Tepe Tsuchiya and Shima, of course.
Shima, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of guys, but I think if they walked down Ginza in Tokyo, I think people wouldn't stop them and say, "Hey, aren't you so and so?"
Yeah, they would. They'd say, as somebody near and dear to me says, you know, you look like somebody.
You look like somebody.
Who is it that you look like?
Did you used to be famous?
Yeah. Did you used to be anybody I should actually know?
Okay. But yeah, this is a young team, and you know, I'm looking forward now as they've clinched this thing. They've surprised a lot of people, and they've clinched this thing. And if any group needs this one win advantage and this home field throughout that stage of the playoff, I think it's these Eagles. I think they overachieved, obviously more so than anyone else in the Pacific League, but. You know, Malkun has redefined the word of overachievement. I think.
Yeah, he's kind of burned it out. We have to get a new word because it doesn't really fit anymore.
Yeah, I don't even know what you can start to say about a guy who, you know, doesn't lose and then comes on and closes out a game for you. That, you know, they didn't have to bring him out there and do it, but
I think some of our listeners might not quite be up on that.
Yeah, Masahiro Tanaka came out on Thursday. To pitch the ninth inning and close out the Pacific League clincher. And it was kind of a shock. I think it started some Twitter talk that he was even warming up. And I thought it was kind of a joke that he was warming up and that he wouldn't come in. But when you think about it, the fact that Darryl Rasner has been out injured, that Takashi Saito hasn't really been all that effective, that they had lost four straight walk-off games at Seibu Dome this year, going back to a series in August.
All those games that twice have made me rewrite my stories.
Yeah, that I, you know, it kind of made sense. I mean, Makun's still only 24. He's their best pitcher, and they wanted to close this thing, and they had a lead, and you know, I didn't have any problem with it personally.
I didn't have any problem with it personally. I think it's kind of funny that people take it that seriously. I mean, here's a team that's got what, 11 games left on their schedule. Or 10 games left on their schedule, and they need to win one, or hope that another team loses one of their remaining 10 games. So it's basically a no-lose situation, except we get to that in a second. But it was symbolic. I mean, it was, you know, Hoshino said, if we're in a game and we have a lead in the ninth inning, I'm going to send Tanaka in, because he wants him to be on the mound when they clinch the pennant. Okay, so I was expecting that. I was a little surprised to see it in a one-run game where it was a little dicey.
Mm-hmm.
But I did expect that, and I thought this is no reason other than symbolism. And you know what? There's an element of baseball that is fun, that has to be fun,
uh-huh.
and not about where this pitch is and what swing you put on it, but you know how you run the bases when it's the game's rained out and you're doing your Rick Dempsey impression.
Right.
So, and this was more important than that because of the history of the team and the history of the region and the season, the 22-0 season that Masahiro Tanaka has put up. Now here's the thing. It was a little dicey because he put the first two runners on base with a one run lead at Seibu Dome.
Mm-hmm.
A bunt puts them in second and third. He's got to get two outs, and he's facing two pretty good RBI guys, Takumi Kuriyama, the mm-hmm. Lions captain. He strikes him out looking, and then he's got Hideto Asamura, who's the PL RBI leader.
Right, and an MVP candidate.
And an MVP, well, that's sort of like saying minnows and sharks are the same because they're both.
Because they swim in the water.
That's the same thing. Okay.
I'm just saying he's a candidate. I'm not saying he's got a chance.
He had an MVP caliber season.
He did.
Okay. Anyway, he struck out looking at a pitch that.
No, he did swing.
He did swing.
He struck out swinging. Kuriyama struck out looking.
That's correct. So one hit, one click, you know, he flicks that ball over the second baseman's head into short right center. The Lions win and Masahiro Tanaka's 26-0 streak is gone.
Yeah, but he wasn't, yeah, I mean, this was my thing is I didn't like it because I think he's kind of a slow starter. He doesn't really have a lot of clean first innings. So, and he's shown a propensity to give up runs early in games. So that was my concern, that he's kind of a slow starter in that respect. But I think he had plenty of time to get ready. But you could see he really wasn't. I mean, the first ball, they didn't hit a ball out of the outfield, okay, into the outfield. He got a ball that went up the middle that I forget who grabbed it at second base. Fujita, perhaps. I can't remember who was playing second in the ninth inning. But they kept it on the infield. It was an infield single and a walk to put the first two runners on. Nobody ever hit the ball.
Right. Here's the logic part of it. I think he's a slow starter and blah, you know, and he would be this kind of closer. John, I'm just saying, like, this is the fun part of baseball. So, you know, it wasn't an issue of about whether he's a good reliever or not, although I believe it was his second career save.
I think it was his third. I know that he had one in 2009, and I think he had one in 2008, and this was the number three. I'm checking as we
speak. He's done it a little bit. And I know, I think he might have come in relief once last year as well. You know, these things happen at the end of the season or at the end of the half.
Yeah, third career save.
Okay. So, you know, it was not ever about whether he's good out of the bullpen.
Yeah, that wasn't my thing about it. My thing was, hey, I tweeted right away. I said, you know, he's not a great, he doesn't start games very well. This is kind of dicey, but you could see he warmed up after the first two batters.
Yeah, it was in fact, what we got was a Makun microcosm. Because it was like so many of his starts this year. It started out kind of mediocre, and then it just kind of got better and better. Before you know it, it was over and he was winning.
Yeah, he pinpointed those pitches to Kuriyama and same as well to Asamura. They just were overmatched. So, I mean, this team has done great things. I'm glad for the Eagles. I'm glad for the city of Sendai. It's been through a lot with the earthquake and tsunami. And
it was on, the game was on the Japan's national broadcaster NHK, where I was watching at the office, and they had Kleenex Stadium Miyagi. I don't know how full it was, but there was a huge crowd, as huge a crowd as you can get there, perhaps.
Yep.
Watching it on the big screen, and they had public viewing all over Sendai. The place just went nuts. So. Yeah, more power to them.
Yep, yeah, congratulations to them. And like I said, I think they're going to need this advantage. I think we're going to see, and I think I tweeted that I think Makun is probably going to pitch a lot in the playoff series, and if they get to the Japan series, I would expect to see him maybe four times if they're going to win four games. So I think this was just a warm-up. I think he'll be coming out of the bullpen a lot. He might have this.
Well, remember, my answer was, well, you know, it could happen. You know, we could see another 2008 Japan series, which is probably the most entertaining Japan series I can remember.
Takayuki Kishi of the
Takayuki Lions. Kishi coming out and being the stud in starting in relief, and all the Lions starters becoming short relievers to respond to the Giants bullpen and the lack of a Lions bullpen. You know, it was a great fun series. I don't see that happening because you just don't see those series happening. But yeah, anything's possible.
It could happen. All right, we got to move along. But congratulations and thank you again, AJ. It was good talking to you.
It was. Thank you very much. And Andrew, we'll see you soon.
All right. Now let's talk about the Hiroshima Carp, who reached their first CLCS ever. They beat Chunichi at Nagoya Dome on Wednesday night to seal it. It was a great game, 2-0. Brad Eldred hits a bomb in the eighth inning, and Yusuke Nomura pitched great. Eldred provided that power presence that, frankly, the Carp have lacked, or they've been searching for, and they get it in chunks and pieces, but not, you know, even this season, not for an entire season. Somebody ends up getting injured. First base has been what would you call that place over there? Because that's just been a danger zone.
I think a toxic waste center. Everything goes over there and just ends up in the, you know, in the disabled list. It's pretty scary. But, yep. You know, here's the thing is as you said, the power supply has been off, but Eldred has had a very productive part of a season.
Yes.
And I think Nick Stavanoa even had a couple of productive games at the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And Kila Kaihue had a pretty productive part of a season.
Yeah, I mean, he's been productive enough. And again, it's the presence, you know, it's what you don't want to face that makes you throw the certain pitches to certain batters before that at times. You know, it's situational. It's all situational. It doesn't happen all the time, but.
Well, I'm not going to get into the science of that, but yeah, well, I'll just let that go. But yes, there's that. And there's also a couple of things which I love about the Carp. And one is having Yoshihiro Maru at the top of the lineup.
Believe in the Maru.
And this guy is, you know, I'm trying to think a similar player in Japan. I guess Hisayoshi Chono is probably the most comparable, a guy who can run and, you know, basically can do it all.
Mm.
But Maru's a little faster, a better defensively, maybe not the high average hitter, maybe not quite as much power.
Yodai Kan?
Yeah, that's probably I would say those two are very comparable. I don't know. They're probably about the same age, too. Maru came along a little later. So, yeah, he is a Yodai Kan. He doesn't look like Yodai Kan. He lacks.
Nobody looks like that.
Yeah, that's true. You know, you gotta go to Universal Studios to get your hair done like Yodai Kan. But,
Star Wars bar.
Okay, that's it. I think you hit the nail on that one. So he's been George Lucified or Lucasified or whatever. Yeah. Anyways, that's Yang Daikon, call him by his real name. And Maru's a terrific player. Kikuchi set a record the other day, which I didn't get around to putting in the story because of time constraints the night the Eagles won the pennant, which was...
I thought they were two away from the record. They set it already then.
He set the record. He surpassed Masahiro Araki with the most assists by a central second baseman in Japanese baseball history.
Yeah, I saw that the record was coming up. I didn't realize that he had passed it. Yeah, I guess that a lot of things got lost in that.
Yeah, Kikuchi's just been he's got on base. He's got speed. He's got tremendous defense. I think who else is a Gold Glove at second base this year?
I think he's
a Gold Glove. I wouldn't give it to Nishioka for missing that time, although he'll be a fan favorite. But I think Kikuchi is the Gold Glove second baseman in his first tryout. That's hard. You know, requires a bunch of guys not being there.
That's true, and they weren't.
So they played their part.
But this guy, yeah, he can pick them, and he impressed you, I know, right away in the early on in the season, and I thought the same thing. I looked at this kid and I'm like, where have they been hiding this guy, you know? But this is the first time since 1991 that the Carp are going to be in the postseason, and I'm happy for their players. I'm happy for their fans. Although I was sitting among the Carp fans for Coco Ballantyne's 55th home run, and the fans, I know that they love this team, but I couldn't tell if they were cheering the players or berating the players the way they treated them and how they talked to them. So I'm happy for the fans, but I want them to enjoy the experience and then realize, hey, you know, this is when it gets down to it, the Carp are going to be playing elite teams now. So, you know, temper those expectations and just root for your team. Of course.
Well, there's a little bit.
I know they're not listening to the show.
not those guys.
Not perhaps, those guys. No.
The Carp have a unique blend of the way they cheer for their team. They're more akin to the Tigers fans in that they don't suffer a lot of foolishness. Other than Tsuyoshi Nishioka. But they, you know, they have kind of a bittersweet approach to the team. They love their guys, but they don't like them being mediocre. They don't like them going about it halfway. A lot of the Carp fans can be like a lot of Hanshin fans, can be pretty brutal.
Yeah. Well, you know, their run to third place, I remember somebody asking earlier in the summer, will the third place team, what record will they have? I think it was somebody with the Yakult Swallows.
We had that on Twitter, and John said...
I said 10 games under.
I
was
said
my prediction.
3 games under.
And it's not done yet, so we don't know, but... You know, that 7-game win streak that the Hiroshima Carp, and I didn't think any team was capable, and I think I said that in one of our shows, I think right after the All-Star break, I don't really see a team that's capable of putting together a long run, but the team that does is going to be the one that gets through. And in that 7-game run that they had, they swept a series from the Giants down in Hiroshima, so I think that was big for them. It gave them a lot of confidence, and I think it's going to be, obviously they're going to play the Hanshin Tigers in the first stage. It's a quick series. I think they can pitch. We know they can play defense. I think it's going to be a really good series.
Well, barring a collapse, barring something unexpected, the series will be in Koshien. It's not decided yet. But,
not completely yet.
But I had hopes there for a while of having the series in Mazda Stadium, which would have given a little extra oomph to it. But anyway, Carp Tigers series at Hanshin will be great. Unfortunately, I don't think I'll be there, but it'll be great. And the Carp lost, I guess, is it okay to switch gears slightly?
Sure.
The Carp lost said goodbye to a very, I guess we could call him a divisive legend. No legend is ever divisive when they leave because everybody comes out and eulogizes them.
I like that, divisive. I like that. That's good.
And Tomonori Maeda announced his retirement and said, you know, it feels like I'm finally done with all this. Like, this is finally over.
Yeah, he said he was relieved. I thought it was odd.
Well, coming out of him, that's probably about the nicest thing he said about teammates and the like. Now everybody's going to miss him because he was such a, you know, he was a little bit like Mount Rushmore in the sense that he was very visible and you could probably have as much of a conversation with Mount Rushmore as you could have with Tomonori Maeda.
Boom, buddy.
He's out there and he's there and he is what he is. And the thing, as people have told me, reporters have told me, he's great with the fans, and the fans love him, and the Carp owner I think, has tried to adopt him on numerous occasions. Essentially, his gushing over Tomonori Maeda's 2000th hit was, according to Marty Brown, one of the reasons that Hiroki Kuroda left as a free agent, because they spent all their money marketing Maeda, a guy who basically most of his teammates didn't have any use for, because he didn't have any use for them.
Wow.
He was, you know, he was a loner, and I don't think he's a mean person or a bad person, but that's his character, and it was always a little sad to see him play, because he looked like he was happy when he was in the game and on the field and doing what he was doing, but uncomfortable with everything else that came with it.
Yeah. Old Stone Face, we'll call him, I guess, then, if if he's not very talkative. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I was kind of surprised him saying that, you know, I feel relieved that I don't have to go through all this stuff anymore and get ready to play. You know, he got hit on the wrist earlier this year. I think it was back in April in a game at Jingu against Yakult, and broke a bone, and he hasn't really been able to get better, and he's leaving. I think the Carp are going to miss him. Obviously, he's only had topped out at 84 at bats in 2008, and then since 2008, he's basically been relegated to pinch hitter. He's done well in the role. He's done fantastic. He's pretty much you know, a guy who got a lot of contact in those situations and came up with a lot of hits. I mean, he hit as high as last year, he hit 327 in 56. It's so funny. You look at his games, and there are 56 games and 56 at bats. So you don't have any doubt about what he was doing.
Yeah, he was up there swinging for sure. Tomoaki Kanemoto said, you know, it's kind of sad. And I think what's sad is that, well, he came up as a fourth round pick, as Kanemoto did. He was about 3 years ahead of Kanemoto, but came out of high school. Kanemoto came out of college. And basically, because Maeda could do it all out of high school, they basically gave him the job they basically made him a regular as a second year player. And they sort of built their outfield world around him. They moved and they shuffled. The Carp had a tremendously talented outfield at that time. You know, it was Hiseyoshi Chono in his prime, and Yoshinobu Takahashi in his prime, and Hideki Matsui, well, not in his prime, but Hideki Matsui, and then they basically had five guys who were all-star outfielders.
Yeah, if you were to talk about it in modern times, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there were five all-star caliber guys on the outfield, and Koji Yamamoto did not have a clue where any of them should be playing except Maeda. So Kanemoto basically got shunted aside, and his career was delayed for 3 years until Koji Yamamoto quit the team.
Mm.
So, but great player, an enigma, a conundrum, I guess remembered for getting into a fight with his teammate over not scoring from second with his bad wheels on a single that cost a guy with a RBI clause in his contract at RBI.
And I have to correct that. He had 56 games and 56 plate appearances, 49 at-bats last year. And then this year, 10 games, 10 plate appearances, 9 at-bats, and he had 4 hits. So, I mean, he was very productive in his role recently, whether people liked him or not. The thing that I found fascinating is he said, geez, if I hadn't gotten hurt, I would have gotten to 3,000 hits. You know, he's going to end his career at 2,119 hits. So I guess everybody could say that. A lot of people could say if they hadn't gotten hurt, they'd have more whatever.
Yeah, it ruined my career.
Yeah. I thought it was your... Never mind.
Well, there were a lot of factors, but that was the big one. You know, it was that the lisp I had when I was in second grade.
All right. Well, good luck to the Carp. Maybe they can give the Hanshin Tigers a little bit of carpal tunnel. Oh, no, he didn't say that. That's so bad.
He did say that, but that's all right, because it's not always about, you know, nuts and bolts. Baseball's got to be fun, man.
All right. All right, another guy who announced his retirement is Kazuhisa Ishii of the Seibu Lions, and he did so. What day was that? Was it Wednesday?
It was a day when I was not at the office, so I'll say it was Wednesday.
Yeah, it sounds like it would have been Wednesday. And, you know...
He would do it on an off day. you know. Everything Ishii did has always been a little
off. Yeah, I just want to go through this quickly. I watched his press conference, and it was like he said, well, you know, I would have stopped playing baseball in elementary school, but my dad pushed me to play, so I just kept playing. And then he had some success in high school. And then he looked around and he was drafted, so he went and started playing. And he said he really didn't like baseball that much, but...
Geez, that kind of came out.
Yeah, and then he said, I probably would have quit, but Katsuyo Nomura, his manager with the Swallows, pushed him. And he didn't like to lose. He doesn't like losing. And okay. That's what kept him in the game. And then he started to have more success, and his hatred for losing drove him. But he said he still has the desire to win, and he'd like to compete, but he didn't want to play because he doesn't want to. He's grown weary of all the work it takes to get ready to play.
Yeah, well, what a surprise.
So I'm just like, what? What is this?
Yeah, he's always a confusing person. I mean, he's a very gifted athlete, and he's one of these guys who, when his, you know, when his mojo's going and his shoes are tied right, that he's unbeatable. But he's also the guy who, I'll go back to the 2008 Japan series, he started one of the games at Seibu Dome, I believe it was game 3, in which basically the Lions lost because he couldn't be bothered to cover first base. And the inning got out of control because he was standing there sort of looking like, oh, I should have covered first base. Well, he got, I think he had a little moment of self-reflection because as soon as the game was over,
mm-hmm.
he sprinted, okay, for most of our listeners who haven't had the Seibu Dome experience, the way players leave Seibu Dome's field and get upstairs, which is about five stories above the level of the playing field, is a staircase under the stands. And Kazuhisa Ishii was probably trying to make up for his lack of
effort,
energy at first base by doing some speed training to avoid the media going up those stairs. Man, I thought it looked like he was being chased by a lion. And,
yeah, and have you seen
and not the guy in the mascot suit?
If you've seen him work out, you know that speed isn't part of his isn't normally part of his training routine. So yeah, it's an odd guy, but. Yeah, I think the Lions will miss him. They certainly have, you know, he was productive when he got there at first, and he really hasn't had a role, and he's going to join one of those talent agencies.
Oh, yeah, Yoshimoto Kogyo. Perfect. Now he'll be in the entertainment industry, and then in 15 years when he retires from that, he'll say, well, I never really wanted to be in the entertainment industry either.
You retire, you mean?
Well, actually, Yoshimoto Kogyo is based in Osaka, Shigetoshi Hasegawa, I believe, signed with them back in the day.
Mm, okay.
But, of course, his business is in the U.S., so I don't know what that does for anything. But
All right. Well, good luck to both of these retiring players. Now, I know you wanted to talk about Ballgate real quick.
Ballgate. Well, I don't know. That's John's name for something or other. But anyway, the third-party commission that investigated the flap over making the ball more responsive over the winter and doing it in secret, they did not release this report. They handed over their 80-page report to the representatives of NPB's 12 teams on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and to be as succinct as I possibly can, they said, well, the commission, there's no evidence to believe, there's no evidence that suggests the commissioner knew that anything had changed. So when they're basically saying that when he said he didn't know, it seems very likely he did not know. So what they then said was, well, he's responsible because he's ignorant, which I didn't quite buy, but they accused him of being a part-time leader. The NPB gig is not his only commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that with the slightest amount, the report said that with the slightest attention to what was going on, it should have been obvious.
Which is what I've said is just lack of institutional control. And maybe because he's got other commitments, he wasn't fully invested. Maybe that was the issue.
Well, I think that's what they're saying. And they're also saying that, yeah, the lack of institutional control, I'm not a big fan of. Well, I think And where that plays into his responsibility is the fact that he wasn't there all the time. Therefore, when the situation was bad, he didn't do anything about it. Whereas previous commissioners had been there all the time in that kind of monkey house and were used to it. But he wasn't there. So he gets, you know, he gets docked points for not being there in a situation that he didn't create, but he let, you know, he let go.
All right.
He let it stay the way it was. Okay, so anyway, so that was the report. Now, the owners are going to have a meeting coming up in which they will talk about the punishments for the people involved in the scandal. And that's where I guess we'll expect to see Kunio Shimoda, the guy, the central figure in this, get fired.
Well,
maybe go work for Yomi Uri or something.
Oh, gosh. Boom! All right, well, we'll see how that plays out. One more little note. Alex Ramirez probably leaving Yokohama. Not probably. I think it's decided. I saw a picture on a website somewhere that said he had a meeting with ownership. So this makes sense. They shipped him out to the minors to rot, basically because of his defense.
And he almost got him to the Eastern League pennant, but they kind of sagged a little bit at the end and the Swallows won. So.
Yeah, so we'll see where he ends up. I know that he wants to stay in the Tokyo area, so maybe Seibu, maybe Chiba, but we'll have to see what team likes him.
Yeah, and since it seems unlikely now the Bay Stars will hire him as their next manager, since the Bay Stars are in a really weird situation in that they have a really mediocre manager. Hey, he's not the worst manager you could have, because at least he's kind of fun and energetic. But they have a pretty lousy manager who said he wants to quit, but they want to keep him.
Mm. He said he would quit if they didn't make the playoffs.
Right. So but he's also said, well, on the other hand, if they ask him to stay, he might consider it.
All right.
And they're going, well, we want to ask you to stay because mediocrity is what we're all about.
Yep. All right. All right. Well, we'll see where he ends up. On another note before we go, Coco Ballantyne is in line for the Triple Crown. He's just a couple RBIs behind. I'm going to say he gets it.
It looked like a sure thing a week ago because Tony Blanco has been having some, I'm guessing he's still having problems with his lower back. But the other day he came back and got a couple of RBIs.
Including a home run. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which prevented Coco Ballantyne from tying him for the RBI lead. So Ballantyne having hamstring issues this season, but I don't think right now, and Blanco kind of touch and go. Yeah, I think it's a good chance. But, you know, more power to both you guys. You're making the season great, so keep going. That's that.
Yeah, I think he's going to get it. I think they don't play each other. I'm looking at the schedule here, and I don't see them matching up with each other. So.
Wow, I have a question. Do you think that if Tony Blanco and Vladimir Ballantyne were locked in a race for the RBI crown, that their teams they would walk the two foreigners to keep them from winning the RBI title? Man, what planet would that come from?
Actually, yeah.
They'd probably be some pitchers who put guys on base, so the guy on their team didn't win.
I think they would, actually. Yeah.
That's the Boomer Wells story. He had a good teammate who didn't want him to have the home run. He thought didn't want him to have the home run title, so he served up some gopher balls to Hiromitsu Ochiai.
Well, they do play on Sunday, so this the day before we come out, and then on Monday there are games on the 30th, and including in that is a game at Jingu. So they have the opportunity. They're going to go head-to-head, so we'll see how that plays out. Let's go to fielding questions. So we have one from Claudio. He posted this on the Facebook page, and he said Coco Ballantyne at the time was one RBI away from having the Triple Crown. So after getting the home run record, if he also gets the Triple Crown, how do you see his chances of winning the MVP? And then he ranked the numbers. He says 1, can't deny him. 2, really good. 3, increasing. Or 4, won't make a difference. He still won't get it. I'm going to say a 1.5. I think they can deny him, but his chances are really, really good. If he gets a Triple Crown, I guess we'll have to see. I said, I said it would take a Herculean effort from a last place guy on a last place team, and I think this is Herculean. I think this qualifies.
I think it is. I wouldn't say four will make any difference, but again,
really, you're going to go four.
Now, here's the thing: I think he will get some first place votes.
Oh, definitely.
Because what reporters have told me, you know, I've been sort of plugging away at this. I've been really annoying people for about the last 2 years. Okay, let's say I've been annoying.
I was going to say, back that up, buddy.
Okay. Let's see. We'll have
you're
a
selling yourself short.
Truth in broadcasting, I've been annoying people for 53 years, but on this issue for just two. Oh,
first 2 years, I think we'll give you gratis.
Wow. 51. Wow.
Unless you were able to talk at like 1.5.
I made some noise, let me tell you. So I'm forever 51. Wow. Okay, basically I've been bothering people about this for a while and essentially asking Japanese reporters who vote for the MVP, who do you vote for and who is in your pool of available players? And basically they said, we need somebody we won't be criticized for voting for. Oh. And I have a theory that I got kicked out of the MVP voting, not because I didn't go to games, but because the people at my office who actually look at the vote and see where everybody voted didn't like my vote when I thought Shinosuke Abe was the best player in Japan in 2011 and I was the only one who voted for him. But anyway, they basically said that you vote for a guy on the winning team because nobody will criticize you for voting for a player on a winning team. Unless the guy wins 20 games or he sets an amazing record, and then essentially they said then you can vote for the guy who is actually the most valuable player because you have an out. Mm-hmm. You have an excuse to vote for the most valuable player. But basically Japanese people wouldn't think a most valuable player would come would only come on the champion, so it's not safe, it's not politically correct to vote for somebody who's not on the best team, the most successful team.
I gotcha. Well, I mean, I know I talked about the reasons for not voting for him, but even I can't deny that he's come through with a lot of pressure on him. I mean, he's gotten these hits. I mean, in a team situation, if you don't get it done, maybe the guy behind you does, or in another inning, somebody else does. But in this case, he had to hit these home runs. You know, nobody could hit them for him, and there was a lot of pressure, especially with the N and his mother in the stands, sitting next to Bocce McCurdy, the guy everybody kept calling Randy Bass, and I'm like, there's only 30 years age difference, but all right. But anyway, he was just as good. I don't think you can deny him some votes. People are going to say that he didn't come from a winning team, so we can't vote for him at all. I think a lot of people are going to put him down. I don't know that he'll be at the top. But he might be second. He might be third on a lot of ballots. We'll have to see. But I don't think you can deny.
My view would be if you don't think he's good enough to earn a first place vote, you don't give him a third place vote. If you don't think for some reason that he couldn't possibly be the best, then you don't give him a third. I mean, you vote for the people who are, you know, next in line for the big prize, not the guy, not as a consolation prize.
So yeah, I mean, I've been asking around too, and I haven't even, I mean, people have been surprised at times when I said Ballantyne, and the usual suspects names come up. I was still, this was before he had finished off this home run record. So I would like to think his chances are 70-80%. You would say that they're not that high?
To be MVP?
Right.
I would think his chances are probably close to zero. But I think he will actually get first place votes, which is a shock. I think he will get first place votes. I'll think the problem is, and you know, people talk about the Central League and versus the Pacific League, and the Pacific League has given the MVP to more players who weren't on winning teams. Happens once every nine years. And the reason is there are fewer voters. Fewer people vote for the Pacific League teams. When you've got 250 people voting for the Central League and 150 voting for the Pacific League, it doesn't take as much of a shift or a swing to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
I think of the Central League, it's just too hard. The Giants were too good. The Swallows were too bad. The Swallows are a second place team. Yeah, he'd be the MVP. But sixth place, I think people will say, oh, you know, give the guy, you know, a gummy bear and
A tough man, a year supply of tough man drinks.
Year supply, well, no, I think he gets that anyway. Okay. I wonder how much that goes for on the black market in Curacao.
Yikes. On that note, we will say thank you very much for listening, and we're waiting for more questions. Thanks a lot, Claudio, for posting that on the Facebook page.
Absolutely, Claudio, a friend of the show, baby.
Friend of the show. We are looking forward to more MP3s and more questions. Please send them to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we'll talk about them on the show. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Enjoy listening to John again, and me as well.
Enjoy your baseball.